You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 10, Episode 4, titled Silence the Whispers. Aaron, I don't know. Part of this episode I like, part of this episode I hate. It's kind of the same parts I've hated of the last episode or two. that they continue to rehash here. I'm curious to hear what you thought of this episode, though.
I think I'm with you. I liked most of it, including all the main plots and the main characters. I don't know what they're doing with Magna. I'll take that one because I think that's my hobby horse, and then I'll let you worry your man later. But I don't know. I think it's unfortunate. First of all, let's talk about the stuff I really like. I really like this exploration of like what makes good people bad, like the wearing of masks and that, and how that can both be a savior, how that can also drive you crazy, how easily those masks can slip off when people are afraid, and seeing it all through the lens of Negan and Lydia, and some of the towns. And that the only thing that's a little bit weak about that plot point is I feel like there should be one fairly beloved member of the cast that's in the bully category. Now that maybe they can be swayed, but it's kind of they've rolled a perfect storm of like assholes, like, you know, a highway lady that we only know because she stood up and said, "We're the highwaymen. We think this sucks," last episode ago.
Yeah.
And like the punk ass teenager from Hilltop, like throw in
the one that survived being an asshole two seasons ago. Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of times. And they have kind of sort of have a little bit of that with like Aaron looking the other way at the bullying and like kind of Gabriel shirking the kind of same stuff, too.
Yeah.
Only really Daryl's grappling with it. But I do think I wish there was a recognizable face that I'm like, oh, God, I like that guy. I'm a little disappointed to sell it this or to kind of show how it's kind of understandable. Like when you've lost as much as some of these people have lost, sometimes you just hate it. There's not a logic to it. We try to act like there is, but it's just a visceral, like, you killed my brother, you son of a bitch. I hope you die.
Sure.
You know, and how do you live with people in that in society? I really like that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Magna. I kind of it's so we found, I think for the first time that we found out that Magna has a romantic relationship with Yukimo, which I think they've hinted at before or outright stated. But there's this kind of like potential power imbalance that in the before times Yukimo was her lawyer, defense attorney.
Did you want me to correct you on her name?
What is it? Yukimo?
You're close. Yumiko. Yeah.
God damn it, my dyslexia strikes again.
Yeah.
Miko. I should just start calling Miko, and then just two syllables I can keep track of.
Yumi or Miko. Either one would work.
Yeah. Yeah. Miko, they have this relationship, which, you know, again, in the before times, that would be considered inappropriate. Like, Miko would lose her license for that kind of relationship. I don't know whether it was a very client attorney, and then after the apocalypse, it became close. But there's a little bit of hurt feel, you know, like, you know, she feels like she's being managed. There's a little paternalistic thing there. There's an imbalance in the power. It's unfortunate though, because they've also shown that Magna is one of the most hot-headed, ill-considered, rash people in the group. Several times last season, putting the group in danger vis-a-vis their new saviors by smuggling weapons and going back on their word and not pitfalling the rules for you know, new processes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe understandable reasons given, you know, her background and being in jail and all that kind of stuff. But still, it sucks that I'm predisposed to think, well, you kind of need to, you know, listen to what the group has to say and take, you know, like there's, you're not very good at that, Magna. So like, I don't know, but maybe they want me to feel that way about her.
Yeah, and I mean, they tried to bring her
around.
That makes
her insufferable, though.
Yeah. The last season, I recall a scene where she, like, did all her hot-headed bullshit and then, like, apologized to Michonne about it or something last season.
It was all
season.
Still unilateral. Like, she was, the group had a consensus and she bucked it and...
Yeah.
She partially cleaned up the mess that she created.
Right. You're right. Like the character consistency has always been. I mean, we have a term for it. It's called moralizing, right? Where you flip flop back and forth and you just change your character on a whim based on what the episode needs you to do. Hopefully they're not going to do that with her. Hopefully they're building somewhere, you know, a stronger base with her. But who knows? Yeah.
So that was my deal. What was yours? What's your thoughts on the episode?
I like 90% of it. I think it was kind of cool, you know, having this tree fall down on the hilltop. And it seems like, I guess I like that scene with Judith and Michonne where she's talking about like bullies and Judith is like, oh, yeah, bullies. You know, there are several types of bullies. And one of the types is they try and get you tired. They try and get you distracted. And so they can take advantage of your weaknesses.
Framing Michonne as a baby bully. I love it.
Sure. poor RJ. But, you know, then the episode goes on to delve into those themes, right? Like, oh, is that what Alpha's doing here? You can see over the course of this episode, Michonne's running all over the different communities. She's now on her way to Oceanside. Like, I like what they're doing there because there's still this big question mark. Is this actually the fuckery of Alpha or is this some series of coincidences, right? Brought on by the explosion in the sky that all the walkers saw. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm leaning towards Alpha because it seems like an Alpha thing to do. I don't know. I don't know.
Right.
So that stuff is good. The problems I have are pretty small in comparison, I think. Like, I don't know what's going on with Sadiq. I do. I know what's going on with him, but like, do I enjoy watching it? It's a guy who is clearly losing his shit and needs to talk to somebody about it. He's got like this half family who he should be discussing it with, but he's not, right? Like Gabriel is what? I don't even know what you would call Gabriel to him. It's like his co-baby daddy.
Yeah,
I don't know, but like
his ex's lover. I mean, feels like there's some kind of barrier there, right? Like, because there's a couple times where he sees him across the courtyard, and instead of like something's made this weird, it didn't used to be weird. It didn't seem like
right,
but something has made it weird. They've hinted about that.
Yeah, I mean, he feels guilty, you know, about not doing more to try and keep his friends from dying when Alpha put all their heads on spikes. Like, I get it. I understand what's happening here, but I just like. I don't know. I wish they were progressing that rather than just like having him twist in the wind here.
Yeah, and I just don't know what they're getting with like it feels very like unironic ghost imagery.
Mm-hmm.
Like Sadiq needs to get with Aragorn and get him to swear these people's allegiance to his sword and lead them off because and there's kind of like screaming and bull. It's like, is he having like a warts flashback or what's going on? Like that was, if he was, wouldn't that have been the perfect opportunity to sympathize with Dante last episode when they're talking about, you know, his war PTSD? Maybe he just like keeps all that stuff to himself and is uncomfortable talking about it, even though when people give them, you know, not everybody, when they see a emotional welcome mat poured out in front of them, like take that.
Oh yeah. I mean,
like, what the fuck?
Several of those people in this community, Daryl, you know, you're never going to get him to open up unless you spend 10 years in a zombie apocalypse with him and you're some kindly old murder lady.
He only helps people that he has hunted their children for. You know, like if he's tried to, in a good way, not in a bad way, hunt your children down, like to in a way to save them. That's the only people he can actually open up to.
Yeah, but Sadiq, I don't know. I guess I don't know enough about his character's backstory to really understand why he's so traumatized by this event, other than it's a pretty baseline traumatic event. Like, I understand
that's the thing. Like, nobody needs a reason to lose their shit in the apocalypse, honestly. But to the extent that we don't really know him as a character, and, you know, it's a matter of like, well, why should we care? Or there's this really kind of like high artistic way they're telling the story. And I just imagine if like you're tuning into a Law and Order episode and a person's jogging through the park and all of a sudden they just grab their head and swoon and everyone around them has an aura.
Yeah.
Okay. Why, who, okay, if she finds a body and kicks off the episode, I'll care about her just a smidge. Right, but sure. I kind of feel about Sadiq. They need to flesh him out.
Maybe this is like a 6 feet under thing. Maybe this is Sadiq having contact with the dead. Are we sure that that's not possible?
I think I've almost gone there a couple times in the last week or two. Like when we had ghosts, like, yeah, like what it about the show says that there cannot be ghosts. What I guess it's like more of a scientific realistic kind of thing. Like they even took great pains to have a CDC doctor explain that this is actually not, you know, like virus. This is a virus and it's done this and it can be studied and you can even work towards it. So like but Z Nation, baby, you know,
sure.
Fuck it.
Why not?
Yeah,
they need a YOLO term for like you're only on air once. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. YOLO.
Yeah.
YOLO.
Something like that. Something like that. That's how my brain spells Yumiko, by the way. That's just an improbable list of U's and Y's and O's and A's. But sure. I mean, there's only one season left. Fuck it. What are you leaving powder in the can for?
Yeah, man.
Especially when you're going to find out it's just them punks and Hilltop with sheets and fluorescent paint, man. It's just going to be a Scooby-Doo thing.
Yep. I'm waiting for the big dog to come in. The big stoned, hungry dog.
Jerry? He's more of a bear, but yeah.
Sure.
We can work that in.
All right. Before we get into the recap, let's take a quick break.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers have a chance to exercise their rights under the Patreon pact we've made by voting for the next pulp movie that Jim and I will be covering. If you're one of the elite few backers at the executive producer level, don't miss your chance to influence us. Hurry over to patreon.com/baldmove and vote in the latest movie poll before it closes on Wednesday morning.
And for all other club members, we've got an all-new episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron this Friday afternoon. Catch the live stream at 1 p.m. to interact with us and your fellow munchers over on Patreon, or you can wait for the podcast to drop later that day.
If you want even more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed,
we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.ballmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
All right, let's get into the recap. We start off with Michonne and Daryl hanging out with her family. And this is like a montage thing. Daryl then tries to bring food to someone. I think it's Carol.
Yeah, it's Carol.
But we see Carol later. I don't know. Sadiq's freaking out. He's seeing Lydia and he's being weird. Ezekiel's bothered by something, probably Carol stuff. And then a tree drops on a hilltop. And then the, you know, Walking Dead music starts playing.
Mm-hmm.
You get the intro. Speaking of music. Oh, God, I hate. What is with The Walking Dead? Have they had a musical cue?
Heaven I Know by Gordy? That didn't just like strike the exact emotional chord of what they're trying to go for.
Heaven
I Know's I Tried. Like, what the fuck? The communities are still together and strong. Like, this is like falling apart music. What the shit?
Dude, the chords it struck were many and very dissonant. I listened to this music and I legitimately thought that I had something playing in the background on my computer that was like a different song playing at a different tempo with like bad instruments, and they were clashing. And so I paused the video and I'm like, wait, no, that's all coming from this episode. That sounds like garbage. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I'm too old to appreciate this music, but this song fucking sucks. And Walking Dead is developing a reputation to me to having shitty music drops throughout their episodes. The last couple of seasons, I can't think of a single one I liked.
So it's funny because we've observed, because when I was watching this, I'm thinking like, did they throw this in for like Riverdale moms that like, you know, like the people that, because I'm starting to feel like this is WB, you know, CW kind of stuff. And I'm a big fan of Jenny Nicholson, is a YouTuber that comments about all kinds of different stuff. But she did this whole thing on the Vampire Diaries. And she wrote me to watch a 90-minute video thesis about everything having to do with it. And she touched on this, that like a lot of these shows that are catered towards the youth license these songs. And it's kind of like this, like a pay for play deal. Like, you know, they approach artists to get them for their like seasonal soundtracks. And they also, there's like, you know, they're instead of like, paying the Beatles $35,000 or whatever, you've heard of that, like Matthew Wiener has to have a Beatles song. And it took $150,000 to clear it for 30 seconds in an episode of Mad Men. Yeah. Instead of doing that, you have a whole bunch of, record labels that you have friendly, cozy relationships with pitch you a suite of 10 songs that you then just work into the season and you get a little bit of cash. I don't know if that's what's happening here, but like, I don't think anyone went through their vast collection of music and knowledge and picked this as the perfect song for this scene. And I do think the AMC would find a way to get paid on the backside of anything, literally.
Yeah.
And if it gets Angela Kang another $30,000 an episode, I guess I'll take the bullet.
But I don't want to
anymore.
Yeah,
it's not good.
I remember it's the hilltop. The hilltop is the problem, man. I remember last season there were these drone shots in the episode and the whispers come up to the gates and there is this shitty music playing as everybody's like farming out there.
Yeah,
it's I don't want to
blame Jesus. I thought it was Jesus that was spinning all the dopey tracks in Hilltop, but it's still going. Someone's got to reclaim the iPod up there. You know,
maybe the tree fell on the record player and we won't have to deal with any more of these.
If here's groaning thing, it falls over and the music just cuts. But no, alas.
Yeah, at the end of the episode it comes back.
Well, it's the damn blacksmith. He must have reforged their gramophone.
Oh, that fucker.
God damn it. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I hated it. What'd you think of this scene overall though? The little montage here. Carol's ship wheel in her house.
I don't know, because like montages are an efficient way to kind of like get people up to speed on some kind of new normal. Mm-hmm. And they're letting us know that trends of late episodes, like Carol being withdrawn and distant and being uncomfortable around her friends, maybe thinking abandoning them would be preferable to seeing them wiped out in a zombie apocalypse. Lydia feeling kind of increasingly isolated with along with Negan, Sadiq not knowing his place in this family. You know, some softcore lesbian sex scenes to let us know that that shit's hot. I don't know. Like it, but the thing is, it bothers me is like, did I need to know all of that stuff? It makes me question like whether they did establish the relationship between Miko and Magna last season. And also, yeah, the music is just really fucking distracting. So I guess as far as cold opens go, I'm ice cold on it.
The other thing that's weird about this, character stuff here is Ezekiel. I guess I didn't see this coming. And this little montage here doesn't do enough to tell me that this has been his state for a while now. Am I like forgetting a bunch of stuff that happened? Because last I remember, he was seeing Carol off, and you know, it was not exactly like what he wanted, but he understood that Carol needed to leave, and like, I thought they'd come to terms on that. And now he's like playing this like, well, I've lost everything and I'm just, he's like suicidal or something.
Well, I mean, this guy's built his whole persona on being this confident in charge guy. And we've already seen like when he has a minor setback, like when he got Henry's brother killed, he's kind of like got off kilter that way. But like this back to back loss of everything, his tiger, his queen, his prince, his kingdom, like why, like it's got, and yet everyone still refers to him as the king. Jerry still calls him the boss, defers to him. It's probably really fucking with him because he just really wants to revert to being that dude, and that dude can't carry that weight. That dude wants to jump off a high place and end it all. I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I guess I need to remember that this is the first time we've really seen him. It's the first time. Well, it's not the first time we saw him this season, right? It's the first time we've seen the Hilltop. But yeah. I don't know. I guess I didn't get the vibe that he was ready to end things. But this episode is definitely telling me that.
Yeah, like who is he? He's like clearly trying to keep it together for Jerry, but I think he's getting resentful of it. I'm the deposed king. I'm the king in exile. He's feeling like not quite as crazy. Who is that? Viserys? Was that the Danny's brother? Yeah. All my Game of Thrones lore has been sucked out of my head in the last couple of years. But yeah, no, I get it. And then like he kind of like some. Yeah. Well, then I guess. Yeah, no, I'll wait to talk about that when we get to the scene at the bridge with Michonne.
OK, let's move on. Everybody assumes the Whispers dropped the tree on him. And Ezekiel has no answers, even though he's the leader of this community. And everybody else jumps in to take care of the injured and get the wall patched up.
Is Ezekiel he now the de facto king of Hilltop?
Seems like it. Everybody turns to him, right, for the next move, what they should do. And he has no answers. He just kind of stands there.
I guess
there
it
numb.
Makes sense because, like, the Hilltop is bereft of leadership. You know,
yeah,
like you went through Maggie's gone. Jesus was killed. Tara was killed. Ezekiel. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that does make sense. He's kind of the senior character with leadership potential. But man, it doesn't seem like he's in a position to lead much.
No. I don't know. Maybe it's some kind of community based leadership like you do in Alexandria. Right. The council.
Yeah.
Because, he's sort of incapacitated. Anyway, Aaron leads some combat training over at Alexandria, and a few of the town's shittiest people make fun of Lydia, and Aaron sees it but does nothing. Can we get, like, a no pot stirring clause in the Constitution? Okay, like, you stir up the shit, you're excommunicated, you're exiled from
you got
the
flush
communities.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, this is not what we need. We've got 15 fucking people left maybe on the planet, and you're stirring shit with one of them?
Yeah. No, it's,
I hate this guy so much.
Yeah, but then it's like, I don't know how you legislate a mindset, because as weird as it is, sure. Like, there are some people that are shit stirrers, but there's some people that stir shit in particular areas and then are very anti-shit stirring in others. It's bizarre.
Mostly
and
when it's
like,
their
you
want to
have
business.
A rule of like, don't stir shit. And then some people argue endlessly about the line between stirring shit versus just, you know, being real and, right. You know, not hiding problems. And then you start. So I don't know. It's fun.
I mean, yeah, any rule you try and set up is going to be used by somebody to as leverage to get their way. Yeah. Right. When they feel right. Wrong.
It's like, you know, don't touch me. As a law between brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. We know how easily that gets abused. That seems like a clear cut, fair, sensible rule. Mm-hmm. But what is touching me? Is touching me hovering your finger a half inch from my eyeball? Clearly not literally touching me, but boy, it seems like a violation of someone's personal space, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I want to see that. I want to see all that legislated over the next few years. That'd be great.
All right. And then Judith asks Michonne some prying questions about the situation with the Whisperers while they're on the road to Hilltop. And Michonne uses it as an opportunity to teach her about how to deal with bullies. But Judith actually has some teaching opportunities of her own when she says that the Whisperers might be trying to wear them down. Suddenly Michonne sees Ezekiel riding a horse into the woods and she goes after him as the others head on to Hilltop.
Yeah, I really like Judith. I thought this was cute. It seems like the kind of sometimes conversations you have as with kids as an adult, where it's like they're not laying adult wisdom on you. It's just that they see things fresh. Like it's naive sometimes, but also it's like, oh yeah, you're actually seeing this for a lot closer to what it is than I'm trying to make it complicated. And it's a really good episode with Michonne and Judith. I thought mm-hmm. I thought it was really cute. You know, this is like really good life advice, you know, like don't really talk is cheap, you know, pay attention to what people do rather than what they say.
Yeah.
And also like this, you know, it's like, especially when you're talking about your enemies, but what do you do when your enemies' actions are like conflicted and muddled, you know, or unexpected and unorthodox? That's when it's really, you know, tricky. I thought this stuff is good. And there is a little bit more depth to what is going on with the Whisperers, you know, like, why aren't they? Why are they biding their time? I got ideas on it. We talked about it. The fact that like Alpha's in a pickle now, if she just crushes the Hilltop Alexandria people, like her people might always think, what if they were right? You know, on the other hand, she kind of has to, because their continued success is an indictment of her way of life.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but, you know, as she tipped her hand to us as an audience last episode. Whenever she, you know, had that breakdown with the beta episode where she's got the shrine mm-hmm. to Lydia, right? Like she still cares about her daughter. The daughter is somewhat of a protection for Alexandria at this point. And, you know, Michonne figures that out by the end of the episode with the guidance of Judith, right? Understanding what's happening here.
But it's smart because they're not asserting it as fact. It's just something that they're trying to piece together. And us knowing both sides of it, we know that they're right. But like also she'd be a fool to like pin all her hopes on that strategy.
Yeah, for sure.
So also the you know, explaining like what Carol did and how that made it more difficult. And I don't know. It's nice. I liked seeing her like kind of measure her daughter and be like, you know what? You are mature enough to handle this little bit more piece of adult talk. And it paid off. I thought it was cute.
All right. So, like I said, Michonne goes after Ezekiel in the woods and finds his riderless horse and then finds him on a platform overlooking the river. He's considering something. I think it's jumping, which is pretty obvious. She tells him mm-hmm. it's okay. She gives him a hug. And then Ezekiel kisses her, then apologizes because that was weird.
What is his deal here, man? I got a theory. I was wanting to know what you thought.
His like, deal. Why I feel like his kiss? Deal is he's looking for something, you know, like he's lost so much. This is just like some misplaced attempt at reclaiming something in his life.
Yeah. Getting his mojo back, because like when he lost, you know, his tiger, he's always had like Carol and his sons. When he lost his son, the kingdom, he still had his tiger. His royal family. when he lost that, it's like I'm nothing if I don't have something. And not that that seems like he's like objectifying Michonne. I don't think it's that simple, because I do think that they have a pretty good relationship, and there's been signs. I might be confusing comic book stuff versus television stuff, but I thought that there in both there were signs of like perhaps an early relationship before, you know, her and Rick got things figured out. That even might have been the catalyst of like them figuring things out. But yeah, like he's like, you know, maybe I can be that guy again if I got this woman by my side, because she's amazing. She's just and fair and beautiful and fierce and a warrior, and like, you know, I could be king if I had that something like some woman like that as my queen. I could see him definitely trying to, yeah, I need, you know, like, especially this constructed character is what's been keeping him going for all these years. Like, trying to find any way to keep that going would probably be a priority. It would be really fascinating, though, if he just keep Pat, like, try to find what is the underlying thing that is the good man and that people follow without the Shakespeare shit. Like, could he actually take the mask off and just be Ezekiel? Would people let him do that? That's the other thing, you know?
Sure. Yeah, or is he always going to be the king to them? It's a good question. You know, a lot of this talk comes in here in a couple scenes, but we can probably just go ahead and talk about it now, because they sit and talk for a while, and he confesses that he feels like a failure for losing his kingdom. His son is not quite wife Carol. Michonne tells him how she coped with her own losses time after time, and they walk back to Michonne's horse, and she asks him, please don't ride out here by yourself again, and the next time, you know, he feels like it's too much, just, you know, talk to her or whatever. They have this discussion about masks, and I thought that was interesting because Michonne has lost so much, right? And she's become this fierce. She had this idea that she was going to go out there and she was going to let the walkers kill her, and she would just, that would be it. And she got out there and she found that she couldn't do it, right? Her sword, like she says, almost had a mind of its own. She put down the sword and she killed a bunch of walkers barehanded, and that, like, I'm ready to die kind of thing was a mask that she was wearing. And eventually the mask just sort of slipped away because she couldn't keep it up. And I think, like, at least that's how I read it. Maybe it's the exact opposite. I don't know. But that's kind of with Ezekiel here. Like, he had this mask of the king. And yeah, it's fallen away, but that doesn't mean that he's a broken person. It might mean that he's about to become a healthier person, right? Somebody who better fits inside of his own skin.
Yeah. Yeah. She talks about this as if it was her time before she met with Rick's group, but also I think it might've described the time when she left Rick, or she lost Rick rather. And we saw her go out again and again into the woods clearing. And we're like, what, you know, what exactly is she doing there? And it does feel like she was trying to, she felt like she had to force this, wearing this mask as the leader, as the mom, all these things that, like, you know, 5 years ago, she would have never thought. Well, maybe, like, you know, when she was wandering around with two zombies chained to her, never thought she would be, and probably resented having to be that strong. They have a lot in common. Do you think that there's going to be a relationship here?
Well, they have this line where they talk about the kiss, and I can't remember who it is that says this. So one of them says maybe in another universe, which I thought was hilarious because they do hook up in the comics, right? They're in a relationship instead of Carol. So in another universe means like the comic universe of The Walking Dead, which I thought was a nice little nod. But yeah, I don't think they're going to go around there again this time.
You don't think so? Maybe. You don't think so? Because Michonne's been like, that's the other thing. It's like, why wouldn't they? Carol's out on the boat. King Ezekiel needs his mojo bags. Got some mojo to give, it sounds like, because he's also low key bragging about it. And he's like, hey, don't judge me on my near suicidal kiss. and Michonne returns like, hey, I haven't been kissed by anyone over 4 foot tall in 6 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Worse ideas. It's worse ideas.
Oh, sure.
They'd make a, I mean, just like talking about your striking couples. Holy fuck.
Yeah. Like, they can share wigs. Did you see how bad Ezekiel's fucking wig is here? They've got Ezekiel's wig put on wrong, I swear. It's like on backwards or something, because the hairline, I don't know if you've seen this, but he has like a millimeter between his eyebrows and his sideburns. It's incredibly
that's
up.
His hairline can't be gainsaid. The eyebrow, he's giving no
that's
territory
too much
to those
hair.
Brows.
It's too
the
much.
The brow kingdom can keep the fuck back because this is the kingdom of the hairline. I was saying, like, them walking down the street would be like, holy shit, that's a power couple.
Yeah. So then, we jump back a scene here to Negan advising Lydia not to let the bullies see her sweat. And Daryl removes Lydia from Negan's area of influence and tells her to stay away from him. And they walk through town where Daryl sees "Silence the Whispers" graffitied on the door.
Yeah. So Daryl strikes me like your dad giving you well-meaning advice for dealing with bullies in high school, but like it's not good advice. Like, don't give them don't give them what they want. Try to avoid them. Like, no, that's not like that's, you know, maybe the tiring out strategy work, punch them in the face will work. But like my experience, that's not going to do it. Once you've actually been set aside as a person to be bullied. So, and sure. I think that Lydia understands the futility of that. Oh, well, I'm the outcast in a group, so I should just avoid everyone. Oh, okay. I see. I should not give them a reaction, even though I see the stalwarts, the people who were described last episode as a saint, is turning the other way, seeing my obvious, you know, torment, you know, fuck these people. So she's losing Daryl. Or Daryl's losing her, and here stands Negan, who suddenly seems very wise and based and ready to listen to the young folk. And I don't know what other the thing is, like, I feel like Daryl should level with her and be like, hey, you know what? I used to be an outcast too. Let me tell you about how when I met this group and how I felt about them and my brother and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, but he'd have to open up about himself.
And tell her about the time that he did exactly what he was suggesting and avoided them by going off into the woods by himself for long periods of time and how that worked out for him.
Yeah. And maybe he thinks it worked out fine and she can go and live out, and, you know, like, you don't have to be a whisperer. You don't have to be an Alexandrian. Just, I don't know. I just felt like, I'm not criticizing the writing. I'm just saying it's frustrating that Daryl's doing this in a genuine way, because she needs someone to, you know, what Daryl needs to do is like have like fucking hard conversations. Like, you know, like he sees these guys like I'd love to see these people bully her. Like if Daryl rolls up on him and be like, what the fuck you doing? She's this little girl, you know, like people like that. Aaron standing up for that's all it needs to happen. But I don't know.
Yeah. And she handles this, I think, in the Negan way, right? She goes and she becomes the bully of the bullies. Not quite, but like she, okay, well, if you're gonna make me this weirdo, I'm gonna show you what's weird. And she goes and messily eats a squirrel at the lunch table, spraying blood all over everybody. They promptly leave, and then afterward, Daryl tries to come up and give her some advice on this stuff. He's out of his depth, and Lydia storms off. The way Daryl handles this makes me think that the story he told Carol about the trucker was in fact, or about his dad being a trucker last episode, was in fact the fake story. It was not real. That was a fantasy, because he's just not eloquent enough to get that point across with like this long fable that, you know, lures them in and then comes around with the haymaker punch. He doesn't really do that.
Yeah, he's more like, hey, what you doing? Why do you do that? Can't you avoid him? Hey. You know? Yeah, you're right.
So probably that's the fantasy.
Maybe for all you're on enough meth, he sounds that eloquent.
Oh, yeah. You know? Okay.
I don't think that's how meth works. I don't think it heightens your appreciation for someone's locution.
No. We go to the hilltop again. The walkers keep banging on the tree and the wall at hilltop, and they decide they're going to try and fortify the wall and buy some time. So Luke and Magna sort of lead the group out of the gates to thin the herd.
Yeah. Professor, your mace sucks. and you're going to find out how bad it sucks in about 5 minutes. What the shit? Like, why would you design something that seems almost uniquely designed to get stuck inside something once you swing with it? Like, go for blunt force trauma, and it's just a big mace with maybe some spikes on it or something.
Yeah.
But this stuff is like, what the fuck, man? Spears, it seems like it's the apex hand-to-hand thing. Keep yourself 10 feet away from a zombie, have a pointy thing that you can just jab in and out.
Well, all the spears are down at Oceanside with the shields.
Maybe. But I just felt like they're getting stupid. They're getting stupid with their shit again. The blacksmith needs to calm the fuck down.
He's trying new things, man. He's got to experiment with his craft.
Yeah, put away the fucking D&D weapons manuals and the Warhammer fucking shit and just stick to the basics. Stick to the goddamn basics. Stop his Renfair LARPing. You're going to wear yourself out swinging that 50-pound. What are you? You're not Bobby B. You can't swing a Warhammer the size of a fucking anvil all night long. Get out of here, Professor. Come on.
True. So we're back to Lydia. She is assaulted by the bullies in the dark. They're about to beat the shit out of her until Negan shows up and puts an end to it. Unfortunately, he gets a little rough and accidentally kills some girl named Margot, who I don't even know.
Yeah.
And then there's like a crowd gathering around. Lydia tries to tell a crowd that Negan didn't do anything wrong. Sadiq freaks out. And we'll get to the rest of it.
Yeah. It kind of sucks, you know. Sometimes you slip, trip, you fall, and you hurt somebody, and you get killed. Like, humans are fragile.
It's true. It does happen. Yeah, you could slip and fall against a wall, I guess, and
bash your brains.
Yeah, you can. It just seems a little unlikely in this scenario, but.
Okay, if you want to say, like, cite in-universe rules, sure. But, like, yeah, it's like, there's, like, that's why it's always risky to get in fights, man. You shove somebody and they slip off the sidewalk, bash their head, they're in a coma or something.
I mean, I've seen Con Air. Sure, you can do a lot of hard time for that.
There you go, especially if your hands are registered as deadly weapons, you know? Yep. You can keep those in your pockets, now you're concealed.
Can I ask you this? I've always wanted to know.
Hard time with Steve Buscemi.
Yes. And Dave Chappelle. That's a complete fabrication, right? There is no law that says, like, your hands are deadly weapons. There's trained, and so you meant to kill.
But I did read an article about guys arguing that's that really kind of made me rethink self-defense about, like, yeah, the two guys were getting a scuffle, and one guy just shoved the other, and as he was falling back, he tripped, hit, and killed himself, and this guy suddenly is on trial for murder. I can't remember how it went, but it's like, fuck, man, you know?
Yeah,
it that stuff happens.
I mean, I've seen Universal Soldier. You think Dolph Lundgren meant to go in the chopper? I don't think so. In the meat grinder.
But it's like, and you're right on this show, it felt a little bit like, you know, maybe they would have, I don't know, have her fall back on a tomato steak or something. Something a little bit more than just, oh, she slipped and hit her head against the wall, I guess.
It was weird. But you're right, it does happen.
That's a bad look. It's a bad look. The guy's been defending the Whisper Girl. And, like, this is like a political narrative that doesn't need a lot of spin to get people all riled up. And they're doing a really good job of showing how reactionary people can be in these environments.
Yeah. Speaking of reactions, Sadiq, totally normal, right? This is a thing that I do. I don't know about you, but I do it every day. I wake up
seeing visions. Yeah.
I wipe the fog of sleep out of my eyes. Fill my sink with ice and water, and I stick my head in and I shout as loud as I can.
Let me ask you this. They don't have ice in the apocalypse, do they?
Apparently.
I thought that was a flashback of him being tortured. Like, is this going to be like,
wait,
who's that guy
by Alpha?
No. I think this is the stuff that happened before the apocalypse. He's traumatized by. Who is the Iraqi intelligence officer in Lost?
oh, Jesus.
Is it Sadiq?
Their names are almost identical. And yes, they're both from the Middle East.
I believe.
I desperately don't want to get this wrong.
I I'm fine with it. The Iraqi. Yes. So I wonder if it's like the opposite of that story where he was like a torturer and this guy was a torturee. Because, yeah, like holding someone's face underneath like a bucket of ice water, I imagine could be a torture technique.
Yeah.
But I don't see where you could possibly get fucking ice in the zombie apocalypse. Like maybe in the glory days of Alexandria where they had fully functional batteries and so all that kind of stuff. But like here, there's no way.
I don't understand what you're saying here. So you're saying that this scene is a flashback to him being tortured?
His face was in a basin of water with ice in it and he was screaming into it. There's no way that basin. So you think that there's a basin full of ice that he just stuck his head in currently in the zombie apocalypse? Where'd the ice come from, Jim?
You're saying he's tortured. Who put his head in the sink?
We don't know anything about him. I'm thinking they're starting to
fill
him in. I
thought we watched him fill it with ice. We watched the man. Is he torturing himself?
Did we really?
Did we?
I missed him filling the base. So he's got ice in the zombie apocalypse.
He's got ice. He's a doctor. He's allowed to have ice.
Hilltop has ice. The people who are working washing machines with stationary bicycles are making ice.
Yes.
Maybe we're too hard on this blacksmith guy, man. He seems incredible.
Well, I mean, I don't believe for a second that the blacksmith built the ice maker. I think. If anything,
They were making a cold compress for Lydia too for her ribs. They can make ice.
The
zombie apocalypse. Okay, well, I was way off. I thought is he flashing back to just like what happened to him last season?
Yeah, I think that's it. Oh. Like he's just traumatized by the spikes on the head or the heads on the spikes and. He can't deal with it. He's shoving his head into ice water, wasting valuable ice in the apocalypse to shove his face into it and scream.
Just to have a good old-fashioned ice cream?
Ice cream? You scream? Sadiq screams for ice cream.
We all scream for ice creams, yeah.
Oh, fuck me. Let's move on.
Do you know
on.
That those words were already out of my mouth before I realized what I'd just done?
Yes.
A good old-fashioned ice cream. Okay.
It's fine, because... They were glorious.
Talent on loan for God, I guess.
Speaking of talent, Lydia, Dr. Dude is patching up Lydia.
Mm-hmm.
Daryl stops by. He tells her he stops by to see her. She tells him how sweaty and repulsively smelly her father was, and how
smelly dad,
at least when he was alive. But that he would have protected her.
He smelled like hell after he was dead. You should have seen it.
Deodorant situation didn't improve, that's for sure. And she also tells him that Negan saved her life. Let's also keep in mind that this is a girl who has spent most of her truly sentient years living beneath a layer of dead walker skin, and she's saying that her father smelled. So
it's exceptional. Yeah.
Can you imagine what he must have smelled like?
Dude that won't wear deodorant. I mean, like, how committed is he to not wearing deodorant? Because, like, you know, she's talking antiperspirant. Because some people have. Or she's talking about just like deodorant. Like, just it's anti stinky. Can the guy not wear like talc?
It itches.
Cornstarch.
It itches his pits.
Just nothing. He's just raw pit. Oh, man. I mean, I don't know. It gets hot. It gets hot in the Baltimore area.
Sure.
That's like a swampy area. I would think that'd be hell. Yeah. It'd stand out from the layers of dead skin, your rotting skin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she has a vivid memory of how badly it stank and she spent years under rotting walker flesh. It's. Yeah. It must have been bad. She got used to it.
Smell. No wonder Alpha's so crazy. She had to sleep with that guy night after night. Oh my God.
It's true. Anyway, I don't know. Daryl goes to see Negan, who's back in his cell, and he says that the Alexandrians want to kill him. Negan says, look, it's an accident. She's the girl he killed is an asshole anyway. And he goes on to explain that they've got him all twisted up with hope. Daryl says, you'll get your chance to tell your side of the story.
Do you think that, so I was watching the scene, I'm like, this is a really good scene, because Daryl and Negan have, like, a lot of history.
Yeah.
You know, like, arguably worse history than Rick, You know, I guess they killed, you know, like events, Negan related events led to Carl dying. But like Negan never held Rick prisoner and psychologically tortured him with Easy Street.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm thinking like, oh, I wonder if they're going to actually get into that. And they never did. It's just all kind of illusions. Like, I know you spent many a night fantasizing about my death and now here it is. And you're not even sure, which is a pretty sick line. But I'm like, I wonder if the writers would like to cite more of that personal history, but it's just too ridiculous. Like, you know, you had me in a box for 3 months. Tell me I was on Easy Street. Huh? Like, it's just going to be, it just sounds dumb if you retell it, you know? It's like, yeah. Nah, it's like, everyone knows they got history.
Sure. Yeah. I do want to nod at some point, though. I want, like, maybe right. one of the records that the... that, you know, Luke and, or maybe one of the songs, the next Ren Faire they put on, maybe Luke and Boston Rob can perform Easy Street or something.
I remember writing this in my notes and I never used it on air, but like when Daryl was kind of going through his lonely woods, woodcrafter dog kind of lifestyle, I thought it would have been so sick if he just whistled a few bars of that just to let us know that he's kind of like not in a healthy mind state, you know, that this is him of like. And they never did. But I mean, yeah, something like that where it's like if he's like having a, you know, Daryl's down bad if he's like, you know, that song is coming to mind. But yeah. I don't know. It's kind of ridiculous. So it's like.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there are things in here that are not ridiculous. Like Daryl has no love for Negan, but he also has no love for abusers. Like his dad was one, right? Yeah, I don't know if you remember, but way back when Merle was still on the show, like. Governor arc season 4 or something, right? They go into this a little bit where they're at both in the woods and they have this discussion about it. So yeah, you got to remember that, like, also he's sort of inclined to believe Negan here. Lydia's telling him the thing is true, and he isn't like people who abuse, especially kids. So,
and he sees that like he says, I think it's him later on. He's like, there's a rot here that if we don't get sorted out, there won't be anything left. Maybe it's Michonne says that. But like, yeah, he's starting to become aware that, like, you know, maybe a year ago he would have been like, yeah, Carol, let's blow this popsicle stand. This place sucks. But now he's realizing like, no, like this, there is a threat here that can undermine everything we've done, you know, everything that written like that. It's like, that's, I think, I don't know what Daryl would do if he turned his back on like all the sacrifices people have made to get this far at this point. Yeah. Like, I think he's a true believer at this point. In a way that like Carol might be just a little too, you know, if Daryl had kids that could have been killed along the way, maybe he could be that broken too. But he's just like not gonna let his friend Rick's accomplishment crumble into the ground.
We're gonna talk about Carol, but let's take a quick break first. We'll be right back.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't a joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
All right, let's talk about Carol. She's sitting on her porch and Daryl's there and she asks him about what the town's saying about Negan. And Daryl believes that he saved Lydia. Carol thinks this whole thing is a distraction from the Whisperers, you know, with the stuff she's heard about Hilltop and all that. And Daryl's more worried about the turmoil within the town, like you said.
There you go. Yeah.
The way they're talking here, especially the way that Carol is talking specifically, I'm wondering if it's not Carol spray painting this shit, Silence the Whispers.
Oh, fuck.
Because she obviously wants Alpha dead. We saw that last episode. Two episodes ago.
Painting right on Daryl's door.
I don't know, man. I could see Carol doing some anti-whisper propaganda here, stirring the shit.
Man, the way she says should have gone to New Mexico takes on a whole new meaning. Like, I tried to get us away from that, and now I'm.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like that. Oof, that would set me against Carol pretty hard if she's. It's one thing to be like, hey, I told you this was going to happen and it was inevitable. And, you know, I told you so. I was always right. It's another thing to like stack the deck against it. Like, I don't think the structure is going to stand. Well, if you're at working hard at night, cutting the foundations, then like, well, you know, you're making a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I don't know.
Yeah, that was kind of what she wants, right? Like, she wants the town to get pissed off enough to actually go do something about Alpha.
To go do something about it. Yeah. She kind of could be that crazy reactionary. It's disappointing, but I could maybe see it. Because you're right. We talked about it last episode. Like, she was ready to take, she was ready to inflict a communal punishment on everybody, damn the consequences, just to have a revenge last episode. So, yeah. She's kind of lost. Maybe she should go back on the boat. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's also having a hard time making, you know, that's the thing. Oh, my God. They set this episode where she's like, you know, sleeping in late and Daryl's taking her to the breakfast. Maybe she's up late that night graffitiing the whole fucking town, apparently.
Apparently, yeah. It's her own door, too, which I think, you know, is used
I think it's like there's
camouflage or.
True. Ooh, yeah.
Couldn't be mine. So, it could be me. Look at my door. It's all fucked up.
Why
too.
Would I pay my own door? And Daryl's my best friend. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just my guess, but I'm calling it now. Then the group holds down the Hilltop walls, but there are just too many walkers. So they retreat behind the wall again. The walkers break it down and enter the Hilltop. And the Hilltoppers fight them off. There's a whole Magna getting pissed off because she doesn't want a retreat scene.
Yeah,
I mean, like, honestly, they might not have had to retreat. They might have had a better chance of keeping this wall up if they didn't stand right in front of the broken section of wall and try and kill the walkers, like lead them away, you know, 100 yards or
yeah, walkers feet don't down want to breach wall. A wall. Walkers don't want to breach a wall. Walkers want to eat people.
Exactly. Yeah.
So lead
lure
them
away from the gaping
take your
hole
juicy
in your
asses.
Wall.
I don't know. But you see what I mean about fucking Professor's mace? Like, right off the bat, it gets stuck in a zombie and he's having to spend 5 minutes wrenching it out of this skull. Like, fail. That's a bad weapon. That's not a useful zombie weapon.
Yeah.
So.
And when you contrast it with Judith in this fucking hat, I love this. Judith in this hat with this sword, you know, just poking holes in zombie heads. No trouble
man.
Getting the sword out.
Like, I think that she spent some time training, or maybe I read that she's like a martial artist herself, but like she moves really well. And it was really cool seeing her do this and also her mom being proud of her.
Yeah.
It's also really cool seeing like King Zihu kind of spring to life, you know, having people to rally to a defense of something like very, very feudal to like, you know, defend the breach in the wall. Like King Theoden screams that in Lord of the Rings. It's like that's right in his wheelhouse, right? Defend the breach. It's a good scene. If some of the survivors had less ridiculous, like their wrist rockets are cool because they actually probably would be pretty bang up zombie, especially with their melon ripe heads of this era. But get the fucking get this fucking mace out of here, man. Get a get an axe or a hatchet or a crowbar. Anything would be something better than this.
Yeah, a broom handle, right?
Yeah. Get a broom handle. Get a lash a knife to it. Boom. You've got a far superior zombie fighting weapon than this fucking thing.
So then we get a scene where Daryl and Michonne update each other over the radio while the town council gets Lydia's attacker's side of the story. Michonne tells Daryl that they need Lydia alive or else they're more likely to be attacked by Alpha. Daryl promises to keep her in Alexandria, and then Michonne gives Daryl her proxy vote and then gets a call on the radio from Oceanside.
He could be the ultimate fence sitter by saying, "I vote no, but Michonne votes yes with proxy." You know yes. what I'm saying? Like he can't. Yeah, I'm just gonna. It's right. Yeah, I'm Mr. Centrist. I'm Mr. Moderate Centrist. Nobody can accuse me of anything.
She you know, tells him all this stuff about like how she thinks this is all a whisper attack, and like they need Lydia alive and all that. And she says, "Let's just keep this between us for now." Guaranteed, somebody's listening in on that radio, right?
That would be an interesting reveal if the Whisperers have like some kind of CV thing or somebody's Yeah, especially since there's enemies within now, too. Not enemies, but factions. Factions that are working against perhaps the council. Yeah, that would be an interesting plot.
Yeah, like the council is being spied on and worked against.
What if Georgie is funding Alpha?
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God. Wheels within wheels.
Not with what? Walker skin?
Like, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I got pelts.
You're right. Yeah. In the deep place, in the real deep place, she's got like a jacuzzi in there.
Oh, hell yeah.
She got a jacuzzi and ice cube producing refrigerator for all the ice creams that she wants. Yeah.
So we go back to the council. They're arguing over whether to kill Negan. Daryl votes no for himself and Michonne, which ties things up. And the deciding voter, Gabriel, decides to sleep on it.
Fucking Gabriel, man. Come on.
Yeah, this is... Where do we leave this episode? Is it the next day? Because like one of the things that Daryl is saying here is the people outside are going to make a choice whether you do or not, and Gabriel just delays the choice. So I'm assuming the show is going to take that and run with it. The next episode, we're going to have townspeople making that choice and trying to go after Negan.
I think it's already happened because Lydia made a choice. Is a unilateral.
Oh, right. Yeah, never mind. Yeah, they might go after Lydia.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know, because like Gabriel, he's been weird this season. I've kind of inclined to think of him as kind of like a hand-wringing do-nothing kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, him like, the council. He's just like, he's trying to get out of the situation every single step of the way. It's like, the council wasn't meant for this. Like, okay, well, then, next time, maybe have a judicial committee that's rotating list of three people that blah, blah, blah. You don't have to have the whole... Or you vote for that and as a something, you know, like aside from the city council business, the judicial is like, you know, because like how do you hold the committee? What if the committee, the council commits a crime? You know, that's all interesting, sure. Good stuff. But right here, right now, motherfucker, you need to make a decision.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. And as Daryl predicted, it's going to lead to bad shit. So.
Mm-hmm. So the next morning.
Acting weird, too, though, this season, I thought.
Daryl has?
No, Gabriel. Gabriel's been very pensive and weird this whole season, too.
Yeah, it seems like he's been like distant from his life. As a council member, he's like taking shit too seriously, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, Gabriel's they imply weird. That he hasn't been there as much for the baby, but exactly. him and Rosita were walking this episode with him out. So I don't know. I know I could be misinterpreting some of this stuff.
So the next morning, Michonne tells the Hilltop that she's headed to Oceanside and she's taking some supplies with her, a couple of wagons. Luke volunteers to go with her to see Jules, his crush, who he was flirting with in episode one this season. Eugene won't be going back in favor of staying to fix the wall, and Michonne is taking Judith with her to Oceanside. I'm I'm worried conspicuous for the fate of Hilltop now that we have Eugene staying there. Because
did you see
the bonding moment of like insect esoterica that him and Luke had?
Well, they're shipping Professor out, so he won't be they won't cross contaminate each other. Yeah,
yeah. The, I just
Blatodia.
Eugene,
like what the fuck? Oh, the cockroach.
I can't wait to see Eugene interacting with the blacksmith, because that's the guy he's gonna have to go to, right? That's gonna be his like liaison for engineering.
But the lead is being buried here, which is a conspicuous discussion of Eugene's science and technology skills, reminding us so that when he comes out with the Eugene Manhattan Project in a couple episodes, we're not going to be like, well, this came out of left field. Yeah, he's a whiz at material science and engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Man build a bridge. He can build an atom bomb. I believe knocks together a flour mill powered by the wind. You can build a bomb, sure. No problem. I believe that.
You're building an arcade machine right now. I'm a little worried about what other projects you got in the works.
I got a fat boy of my own I'm building. But I do like that, like, I don't know. Like, it's funny. I think it's funny in, like, a Star Trek The Next Generation kind of way, that how everyone is kind of having fun. It's like Eugene's Data. When he's talking about, I'd like to stay and fix the crooked tooth of Hilltop's otherwise pristine smile. And everybody's like, you mean it's Fence Data? You stupid. I like that. I like little moments where the audience and the characters can kind of chuckle at somebody. It's good.
Yeah, Eugene's a lot, and it's taken years to get used to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'm there.
Yeah. Man likes a colorful metaphor. Who doesn't?
And I can't tell if Michonne sees this or not exactly, but she is being shuffled off from community to community, right? Does she connect the dots on this thing that Judith was talking about earlier in the episode?
I don't know. What are you talking about, the wearing out strategy?
Yeah.
Are they trying to wear the Alexandria bullies out? Like,
no, I think Alpha's trying to wear down the Michonne specifically.
See, I still think that there is, I like, from the one-off Whisper episode, I really do. I'm a full-time believer of the satellite thing. And like, here's the thing, like, Michonne, what she said here in this is like, you know, one time is a coincidence, you know, one time's an accident, twice is a coincidence, three times a trend is like broadly what she's paraphrasing. Yeah. That's actually a pretty like interesting Occam's razor kind of tool to have in your toolbox, your intellectual toolbox, analyze stuff. But like, when you have it leads in people into trouble when you're dealing with a truly unprecedented event, like a satellite falling from Earth that could plausibly bring zombies from 1,000 miles away in all directions. Like, that is a very plausible scenario. So they could be doing brinksmanship where there's none that needs to be played. I don't know, but I still think that that's probably right now. And it would be a very interesting thing for The Walking Dead to play with, that like neither Alpha nor the communities want a war, but they're going to war because of each other's unperfect understanding of what's going on. That's fucking pretty cool space to explore, I think. Lots of dramatic possibilities.
Guess we'll see. Magna is super disappointed that they didn't try to hold off the walkers entirely, and she takes it out on Yumiko.
Yeah, I already said my piece on this. I think that this is an interesting thing to explore with their different power dynamic and relationship and all that kind of stuff. I just wish Magna had demonstrated a little bit more of a better head on her shoulders, or like, you can start off impetuous, but like, learn that lesson over a season or two. But I don't feel like that's what's happened. She's just kind of like, she comes across as a child wanting their parents to let them do something because they're grown and without having demonstrated the skill to do it. Kind of like, you know, let me do it. I want to do it. Well, you're just going to fuck it up. No, I want to do it. You let them do it, they fuck it up. You know, why don't you let me do anything? Well, because you suck. So Magna, stop sucking for a season. And then we can talk.
Maybe take some lessons from Judith. She'll teach you how to be cool.
Yeah, she'll give you a friendly ear, second pair of eyes, and a friendly ear. Judith Woodprice said, you know, it's like sometimes, you know, my mom tells me I can't take juice in the living room because if I spill, it'll stain the carpet, and I do it anyway. I guess what? I spill and stain the carpet. Then I maybe wait for a birthday before I ask to take Juice into the living room again. That's probably what she would say, and Magda'd be like, "Fuck you, Judith.
Sure.
You don't know anything. You're just a child."
Yep. All right. Gabriel visits Negan and finds out that he's missing, and he tells Daryl. And then Lydia tells them that she's the one who let Negan out, voluntarily imprisons herself because that's what the town wants. And when Daryl comes to see her, she tells him all about the masks that Daryl's civilized people wear. And she says she belongs in a cell because it makes her feel safer. So Daryl lets her stay there.
Yeah. She's playing it like the Alexandrians have played right into Alpha's hands by behaving predictably, because now Lydia, who really wanted to give things a try and who is moved by, you know, adolescent love, but still genuine love to try to be better and take these people at their word, have found them to be hollow hypocrites. That sucks. If she ever makes her way back to Alpha, I imagine she'd be an even more devoted whisperer at this point. That really sucks. So too bad we have to act like that.
And I'm happy to see The Walking Dead go for a larger like overarching theme of these masks, right? And they've been doing it for a while now. And I feel like this era of The Walking Dead, when they do something like that, it mostly pays off. This stuff is paying off. I don't think it's cheesy. I don't think it's overdone. I think it's like, you know, it's not the most perfect thematic thing that I've ever seen done in a show, but it's also light years better than what they were doing in the previous seasons.
Yeah, I wonder how much of this comes from the comic book, this thematic stuff, because Kirkman was pretty good at doing that stuff, too. But like, I don't know that he's like this bringing back the analogy of Michonne and her initial affect and King Ezekiel and how that's all still a mask in the context of the Whispers. That's, you know, it's above average storytelling.
Sure.
And I don't know if that's something that came from Kirkman himself or what.
I mean, it's a hell of a lot better than the stuff they were doing with Morgan and clearing and all that stuff. Like that stuff started out good, but man, they went overboard with it. And man, they kept that theme alive way too long and never did anything with it beyond the singular thing. This feels like they're giving each character a couple of moments to explore the theme of masks. They're applying it to the larger community and the people inside of it. I've been pretty impressed with what they're doing with that stuff.
And instead of coming out of nowhere, it comes out of a rich place in the character's history. Like the mask stuff, you know, like for Ezekiel, it's very easy to see King Ezekiel. I mean, he's talked about it, how that was literally a fabricated persona that he took on, you know, as a way to survive and then thrive in it. And Michonne, it's like, it's a little bit of, she never explained it that way. But like when she sits down, it's like, oh, yeah, this has come out of left field. And that's why it's like, and I don't know. Some stuff with Magna and Sadiq, it's not like it comes out of left field. It's more of just like we know so little because these characters were just parachuted into the main narrative because we killed big characters and we need, someone's got to carry the plot. And they were you know, it's like, I don't know how you do it better, but maybe weird ghost nightmares and childish tantrums isn't the best way to flesh out those characters.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see.
Because the other thing is like, I think the other thing is like, if they want to make it more cut and dry, like they need better, like I totally believe that Miko could be overprotective and paternalistic towards this person. Like that would be the natural way they would probably see each other. Right.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it'd be better if like she was, Magna was bucking against stuff that was more cut and dry that way. And like Miko was really overextending herself. But like, it just, they're not doing that story. And I think that's the story they're wanting to tell. But we'll see how it goes. Maybe Magna's just a little bit dumb. And
she needs a bucket of water with some ice in it, as far as I'm concerned.
Good old ice cream. So sort her out. Report to the infirmary for an ice cream.
Everyone loves ice cream.
Uh-huh.
All right, Ezekiel comes back to Hilltop and tells everyone that, oh, I'm good now. Don't worry, Jerry. You know, that stuff you heard about me wandering off into the woods to kill myself. That's over. Luke says goodbye to his friends as the wagon preps to leave for Oceanside. And in Alexandria, Daryl scrubs the graffiti off the door.
How on a scale of 1 to 10, how invested are you in Professor's Oceanside romance?
I guess I like him. He's one of the more well-defined characters of that group. I feel like the strongest, the strongly defined ones are like Connie and Kelly.
The ones have actually like, given a plot that's worth a damn to do. Yeah,
they're real fucking characters. Luke is like borderline that character. I think he's you know, just over the line. He's good. The other two, I don't know much about him, so I don't care. But yeah, Luke,
it's prison tat, let's do some Luke stuff. Competent bow girl. Yeah, I would like to. And you know what? I actually really, the times where they've had a romance in the show that I've always been invested in, because it's something. Yeah, like romance happens everywhere, in the middle of terrible wars, natural disaster, love.
Are
in
you
time
saying
of cholera
love can bloom on the battlefield? Is that what you're saying?
Can't anywhere. Okay. And it's always been, I always like that. I'm a little bit of a shipper. So yeah, I'm seeing several ships that could take flight. Ezekiel Michonne ship, the strong ship. Yeah, Professor and whomever, I can't even remember her name.
I mean, it's a hell of a lot better than what went on with Eugene and Rosita, right? Like I'm 9 times more invested in that, in Luke, than I am in that whole thing. So like,
yeah, I've been like, yeah. Yeah.
You know, Luke's got like Rosita this awkward game. Charisma. I enjoy that character, and I think like the woman they had play what's her name? His crush.
I can't remember her name either.
She was also very cute. So like let's do it.
I like him. Yep. Good ship potential.
And that's it.
I want to see them on a boat. I want to see them on a boat, on a shrimp boat with Carol.
Mm-hmm.
Carol's going to sign with the Lovebirds, and it's going to drive her fucking crazy. Bottle episode. A little fan service, a little comedy stylings of Professor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Odd couple. Yeah,
she's on speed. They're on the crack that is New Love.
Maybe that's one of the bonus episodes that they're going to do. They're doing right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I seriously doubt it, but you can hope.
Yeah.
Hey, we were right about the Rin Fair.
That's true. That's true. And again, we're getting this bomb. We're getting this. We're totally getting this nuclear bomb. Did we talk about the scrubbing of the doors?
Oh no.
Yeah, Daryl's like that's the hopeful ending during the song about things falling apart and breaking up because you tried and it just didn't work. It's a great emotional theme ender for the episode. But like, did you think it's funny the scope of the graffiti that's in Alexandria? Like, it's not just Daryl's door. It's like the whole fucking place is tagged up, man. The streets, the sidewalks, the houses, the fence. You didn't see this? You must have been like gone into the finishing your notes mode
for sure. Yeah.
We went a whole like drone tracking shot of Alexandria. It's just plastered. There's like 20, 30 Silence the Whisperers in sight of Daryl's front door. He's going to be scrubbing a long, long time.
Wow.
So much spray paint in the zombie apocalypse. That shit. I guess the shelf life on that's a long time.
Yeah. And not a ton of need for that. Like, that's not the first thing you grab off the shelf when you're scrounging for supplies. So, yeah.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. Spray paint. But that's the episode.
That's the episode.
Alexandria just full of graffiti and broken windows now. Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. So it's a commentary. So that's going to do it for this episode, but we are going to have a feedback episode on stereo.com/baldmove. And also pay attention, because we're also announcing a couple other changes here. Starting next week, we're going to start doing our live recording of this podcast on Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/baldmoves. That's starting this next week, the episode 5 of season 10. We're going to record live on twitch.tv/baldmove. And then immediately after that, so whenever that is in the afternoon, it might be 2:00, it might be 2:15, it might be 2:30. We're going to start the feedback show where we're going to do that on Twitch as well, live. But we're going to run it through stereo.com/baldmove. So people that want to, everyone can watch the feedback show, but people that want to can get on stereo.com and leave us feedback. Because it just doesn't seem like the Wednesday night is moving people. Yeah. It's not an like shocking that an 18-month-old show that everyone's seen before is not getting a ton of feedback. But if we have an existing audience on Twitch that are watching us live record, we might be able to move a couple of those people to help us out there. Yep. I still, like, I can't wait to use stereo once we get back into a live environment where, you know, we can have big live watches and instant takes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Hopefully later this summer when Walking Dead season 11 comes out. But for now, that's what we're going to do to tweak it. So this week on Wednesday night, please show up at stereo.com/baldmove for a little show. Jim and I will put on a little bit of a dog and pony. Hopefully people will come up and leave us some feedback at stereo.com/baldmove. Again, it's a free app. Lets you leave feedback to us in your own voice. But yeah, check that out. And we'll be back next week again, recording live on twitch.tv/baldmove at 1 p.m. That podcast will come out later that night, but immediately after our recording, we'll start the feedback show on stereo.com/baldmove. Hopefully that's not too confusing for everybody. We'll see how it goes. We're trying to find new spots for this new technology to work in and just playing around. Also, continue to send us written feedback at watchingdead@baldmove.com because we're going to be considering that as we go into the half season mark. You know what? We also could just dip into that to do some early going stereo stuff. You know,
get the pump primed.
Yeah, that's a good idea. All right. Anyway, next Wednesday, this Wednesday, their final Wednesday night show. They're going to move it to Tuesday. You guys know it all. Twitch.tv/baldmove, stereo.com/baldmove. We'll see you next week for the next episode. Until then, I'm Aaron
and I'm Jim.
Later.